third case for argument this morning will be Cueto Estrada against Holder. They're the best cases on the top. Mr. Washburn.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mel Washburn on behalf of the appellant. I want to start by just nailing down a few essential facts. Mr. Cueto was granted his lawful permanent residency in 1990. In March 1995, a notice of intent to rescind that status was prepared by the INS, and the government contends that it was mailed to Mr. Cueto. If Mr. Cueto had responded to that notice within 30 days requesting a hearing, he would have been entitled to a full hearing before an immigration judge. In July of 1996, having received no response to the notice, the district director of the INS rescinded Cueto's LPR on the grounds that it had been fraudulently obtained. That decision is not reviewable by the immigration judge or by the BIA. The record before this court contains no evidence that Mr. Cueto received the notice of the director's intent to rescind. In fact, whether it was really mailed by the INS is doubtful. There is no evidence that he received notice of the rescission itself, and there's no evidence of the alleged fraud. Our contention is simple. The director was required to serve the notice by means reasonably calculated to reach Mr. Cueto. And that principle
is... Why isn't mailing to the address the alien has on file reasonably calculated to give notice?
Your Honor, in those circumstances, it was not. That requirement to report your changes in address to the INS had not been enforced for years.
I'm not asking whether the requirement had been enforced in the sense that if an alien didn't keep his address on file, the agency sent a team of goons out to arrest him. The question I'm asking is why anybody can complain when an agency sends him notice at the address he provided to the agency.
That's the question I'm attempting to answer, Your Honor. The question is reasonable. Was it reasonable for the INS to take an address which was several years old, take this very important notice, and send it to Mr. Cueto at that address? If you look in the record, there is no evidence. The return receipt has no evidence.
Let me try the question a different way. Do you have some case that says that it is inadequate when an agency sends a notice to the address the recipient himself provided?
I do not have such a case. The question is one of reasonableness.
Not only do you not have such a case, I searched and could not find such a case. Now, the United States has been around now for 200 and quite a large number of years. The idea that agencies have to serve addresses other than the ones people provide, not having found any support in 200 years, you're asking for quite a lot.
Well, Your Honor, these are very special circumstances, and we know.
No, these are perfectly ordinary circumstances. All the time, people who are subject to federal rules fail to keep their addresses up to date. And the normal consequence of that is they don't get mail. But what courts normally say is, you serve the address on file, that's all that can be expected.
Well, Your Honor, this court has found in very similar circumstances that where the INS mailed a notice, it was actually signed for by somebody at the address of the alleged recipient. The INS got that back. This was a notice to show cause, an order to show cause, and concluded that the gentleman had not responded. And years later, he was allowed by this court to reopen that because he had not received adequate notice because the INS had not troubled to assure itself adequately that he had, in fact, received that notice. And that's what we have here. Only here, the circumstances are even more egregious. The certificate of mailing is in the record, and there's nothing on it. In the other case, there was an illegible signature. In this case, there's nothing. and that's not reasonable, and that is a case that's very close on point, and in which case they were allowed to reopen. And I think the same decision is appropriate here.
I have a procedural jurisdictional question. We obviously have jurisdiction over the issues to the extent that they come to us in the form of a petition for review from the BIA's decision, but we have the companion case that was filed in the district court under the APA to review the agency's decision to decline to reopen its decision to rescind the petitioner's adjusted LPR status, as I understand it.
Well, it's actually the issues that were brought before the district court, and which are were a little more broad than that. We asked the court, both under the Fifth Amendment and under the APA, to determine whether or not that original notice that we were just talking about was appropriate. At that point in time, the BIA and the immigration judge had already decided they didn't have jurisdiction to rule on those things. And that appeal was working its way to this court. It's clear that the district court has jurisdiction to rule on those constitutional issues.
Why is that clear after the Real ID Act, which strips all courts of jurisdiction to review discretionary decisions?
Because that's not discretionary. Due process is not discretionary.
Well, but to the extent that there's a constitutional argument being raised, that can be brought up through the petition for review directly to the Court of Appeals, but there is no independent basis for district court jurisdiction over this sort of a thing. The underlying decision to rescind his legal permanent resident status is committed to the Attorney General and is not reviewable.
No, it absolutely is reviewable. It's a denial of due process. It's reviewable under the Fifth Amendment.
Maybe you're missing my point.
My point
is that to the preservation of judicial review over legal issues and constitutional issues specifies that the exclusive remedy for achieving judicial review of those sorts of issues are in a petition for review to this court, not in an independent action in the district court.
Well,
I thought that was the import of the Real ID Act, was to remove most habeas and other independent actions in the district court in the immigration context and sort of coalesce all these issues in a petition for review brought directly to the Court of Appeals.
Is that
not what the Real ID Act achieved?
No. And the cases which, for instance, the district court cited, the Rodriguez case, which it decided, only concerns discretionary review. The agency does not have the discretion to deny due process, under either statutory due process, the right to a hearing, which is clear under the statute if you respond within 30 days, or constitutional due process. The agency doesn't have a right to deny those things.
So
it's not discretionary.
So he's being deprived of due process because he's been removed on the basis of a rescission of his adjusted status because of a lack of notice. Why can't that be reviewed in connection with the petition for review?
Well, Your Honor, the fundamental question here, and the fundamental due process question, is the question of whether notice was appropriate, appropriate notice of that intent to rescind. That's prior to all of those issues. The BIA and the IJ rightly decided that they couldn't look behind the district director's decision in most instances. I think they were there's a procedural way that they could have gotten at those, but they chose to reject that. That issue of whether the district director gave proper notice, made a reasonable effort to reach Mr. Cueto, is one which is reviewable by the district court.
The question behind Judge Sykes's question is, why can't the immigration judge and the BIA review it? Suppose the district director in 1996 had rendered an opinion saying, I'm tired of giving notice to aliens. I have deliberately not notified Cueto about this. His status as a permanent resident is rescinded, and from now on I'm not letting any alien know what's going on. Yours sincerely, the district director. Do you think the immigration judge would be powerless to say that decision is not going to be honored?
Yes, he would have the authority to do that. In fact, we argue,
wait,
Mr. Cueto's attorney.
When you say
that
he would have the authority to do that, what is the referent of the word that?
Yes. In this context, where there's
just deal with my hypothetical.
Okay.
What would the immigration judge be authorized to say that order proclaims its own invalidity and I'm ignoring it? Would the IJ say that?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So that raises the possibility that the immigration judge and the BIA can decide for themselves whether the alien got his notice and an opportunity to be heard, even though they can't reconsider the district director's discretionary decision about whether on the merits.
Correct.
But that implies that the right jurisdictional front here is not the APA action, but it's the petition for review of the BIA's decision. Because you're not challenging the discretionary decision, you're making an argument that notice was never given.
Correct. And that the due process, therefore, was denied. He was denied the hearing which he was entitled to under the statute. Of course, we're here on a petition to review the immigration judgment as well.
Right.
Yes,
you
we
have
do.
Have both before us, but
correct.
We need to figure out which is the right way. And it's entirely possible, it seems to me, that the APA action in the district court is correct, but only if there's no possibility of review in the Court of Appeals. And once you say the Court of Appeals can review the denial of notice, then the APA action seems dead.
The whole point of the Real ID Act was to eliminate these parallel tracks for this litigation.
No, I follow what you're saying, Your Honor.
And that's what we've got here?
Yeah. We have that because the immigration judge and the BIA refused to consider these things, and we were unwilling to abandon all reasonable avenues for redress.
Well, I completely understand why you want to preserve both routes. We just need to pick what the right one is, since both have been preserved.
Well, here, this would be my suggestion. The government has already conceded that the district court wrongly determined that it lacked jurisdiction.
That may be wrong.
No, that's right. The district court did wrongly determine that it lacked jurisdiction. It did so based on a case that says you lack jurisdiction over discretionary decisions. This is not a discretionary decision. My suggestion would be remand to the district court. Let him determine the procedural issue.
I thought you just said that the immigration judge and the BIA had authority to say that because there was no notice, the 1996 decision was void.
Yes.
If that is so, then the district court had no subject matter jurisdiction, and we shouldn't be remanding to a court with no subject matter jurisdiction.
Absolutely. I'm not saying the IJ could, and it's, we may be trying to decide how many angels can dance on the head of a decimal point here.
No, we're not.
I may be.
Trying to decide which tribunal has subject matter jurisdiction, which
correct,
is usually a pretty important question.
I agree it's fundamental. It may be that the IJ and the BIA do not have the authority to determine that the rescission of the LPR is void ab initio. They may only have the authority to decide they're going to ignore it for purposes of deciding whether there was a statutory eligibility for discretionary relief. So there's a difference between deciding that it's void and deciding that they don't have to consider it, that they get to consider a new that he's eligible under the statute for discretionary relief. And if this court thinks that, and this court finds that they actually have the authority to void it rather than just decide we're not going to consider it for purposes of our discretionary relief, then yes, that would be the way to go. And as a practical matter for Mr. Cueto, either one would get into the same result. And if this court is more comfortable, and if you feel that the lines of jurisdiction are clearer for the BIA and the IJ, then I certainly would not oppose a remand to that agency and put in holding in abeyance the appeal from district court. Does that answer the question?
It does.
Thank you. I think if you remand on those issues, then essentially all of the other issues that are discussed in the brief are ones which are reserved either for the district court or for the the immigration judge. And it's clear, generally speaking, that the arguments about futility, which the government raises, are meritless because the record has not been fully developed. Those are not ripe. And those should go back to the fact finder, whether it be the district court or the immigration judge. And then we'll have a full record on which those issues can be decided. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. Your Honors, counsel, may it please the court. My name is Adam Goldman, and I represent the appellees in this matter. I will not go through all the names, but, Your Honor, this is before this court on two separate matters. One is a petition for review, and one is a district court case. To briefly go into what happened in this matter, these cases, Your Honor, before the petition for review in the immigration court, this individual had a heroin conviction after his LPR status was rescinded. It was rescinded lawfully pursuant to the regulations, 8 CFR 264.1 and the statute, which is INA Section 246. In this matter, Your Honor, the appellant in this matter never provided his most recent address. He only provided one address, and he, in fact, conceded before the immigration judge, despite the claims now before this court, before the immigration judge, the appellant conceded that it was sent by certified mail, just that he did not receive it. So regarding that matter, Your Honor, we would note for the record that the appellant actually conceded before the administrative body that...
How could he concede that it was sent by certified mail if he didn't receive it?
Yes, Your Honor.
If somebody sends you something that you don't receive, you don't know how it was sent.
Based on the record, Your Honor, in this case, what was provided to him was the receipt with the receipt number printed on it. And based on that, appellant through his counsel stated that he understood that it was, in fact, sent by certified mail. So that was the basis for that concession.
Yeah, well, you can say he understands that his opponent asserts that it was sent by certified mail, and he has no contrary evidence.
But actually,
I don't think you can make a binding concession that something you have never seen occurred.
But he did have a receipt, Your Honor, the receipt with the receipt number printed on it.
The INS had a receipt.
And that is what the appellant relied on, Your Honor. Furthermore, Your Honor...
What kind of a permanent address or address do you give when you're a migrant farm worker, come over here from Mexico? I understand you're supposed to give a permanent address, but how do you do that as a practical matter?
Your Honor, you give the address at which you're residing at, and if you, in fact, happen to move...
They pick berries in one place, and then they pick avocados in some other place, so... What are they actually supposed to do?
Your Honor, this this appellant also conceded to in his affidavit submitted to both the district court and the Board of Immigration Appeals. What he stated is that when he moved, every time he moved in this migratory fashion, as Your Honor referred to, he did a return receipt to the post office. In addition to that, Your Honor, he had an obligation under both the INA and the regulatory framework to also provide a change of address notice to the Immigration and Naturalization Service at that time, later becoming ICE and USCIS. So he was to do exactly what he had been doing with the post office, but he had the obligation to do that also with the INS. Furthermore, Your Honor, we would note that also he provided evidence of his LPR card itself, which expired, I believe, in 2002, and he also had to provide notice to get a valid legal LPR card. And to do that, he would have had to give his address as well, so he could have received in the mail a valid, legal, current LPR card. We refer to those sections at 8 CFR 264.1. We would note, Your Honor, that there's only one reason in the regulations as to why he would not have to do that, and that's if the appellant did not believe he was, in fact, a lawful permanent resident. But, Your Honor, we would like to refer to this court's issue before regarding the Padilla v. Ashcroft and the district court jurisdiction. Regarding the appellee's concession in this matter, what we were referring to regarding that concession was the fact that to the extent that the only challenge before the district court was that limited motion to what was called motion to rescind the rescission, to make it simpler, just call it the motion to rescind. To the extent that all he was challenging was the denial of that motion to rescind, that motion itself would have been a proper matter for the district court pursuant to the APA. That would not have been a matter that would have been reviewable by by the IJ or the BIA.
Why not? Go back to the hypothetical that I posed to Mr. Washburn. Suppose the district director in 1996 had issued a decision saying, I'm sick and tired of sending mail to aliens. I've stopped. I have not given any notice to Cueto, and I hereby rescind his LPR status. And, oh, by the way, I'm not sending him a copy of this decision either. Signed, yours sincerely, the district director. Right? And this is introduced into the proceeding for Cueto's removal. Could the immigration judge say, no, that decision proclaims its own invalidity. I'm going to ignore it.
If I may make 2 points on that, Your Honor. The first point is that regarding when, if it was so egregious, as Your Honor has pointed out, namely that it was, in effect, a void notice, that...
No, you'd be perfectly clear about the hypothetical. It's not a void notice. There is no notice. That's what the thing declares. No notice was given.
Under the current framework, Your Honor, it would appear that pursuant to the Rodriguez-Esteban and also Ali v. Reno, that if that rescission was done in that manner, then the immigration judge and the board would not have the jurisdiction to review that.
Why not?
Because that is a matter submitted to the discretion of the district director as opposed...
Well, there is nothing committed to the discretion of the district director about not getting notice. Right? I can easily understand the contention, which apparently the view of the board, that the district director has a discretionary decision about who is to be a lawful permanent resident, and the board won't review that. I gave you a hypothetical where there was no discretionary decision by the director. The director is obliged to give notice. The director says, I'm tired, right? I'm just not going to do it. No discretionary decision being reviewed. That's why I gave the hypothetical the way I did.
Oh. Now that I understand, Your Honor, I believe in that case, the reason why they would have jurisdiction, the IJ and the board, would be because there would be a violation in that case of the regulatory framework that the IJ has to follow and has to actually rule upon.
That's the claim here, as I understand it. So it should have been reviewed?
Your Honor, on that point, I believe there are two issues on that. To the extent that that was a direct claim, that the notice itself was void, that was actually never raised before the IJ.
I wish you'd stop saying that. There is no claim here that there was notice, but it was void.
Okay.
Claim being made here and in my hypothetical is that there was no notice.
All right. To that extent, Your Honor, and to the extent that there was that the allegations that the framework of the regs were not followed, then that would have been proper before the board and immigration court.
And then the exclusive remedy for judicial review of that is a petition for review to this court, and mm-hmm. the district court action here was lacking in
right.
subject matter jurisdiction.
I would agree on that point, Your Honor, but I would also...
But as soon as you agree on that point, we have a problem, because the immigration judge and the board refused to consider this argument.
Actually, Your Honor...
And if we have jurisdiction, if there's no jurisdiction on the APA side and there's jurisdiction here... The only thing we can do is remand so that the board will consider this argument in the first instance, because they're the right people to consider it, not us.
Actually, Your Honor, if I may respectfully disagree, the reason is that this was actually what was filed in this case was a motion to rescind the rescission. All the parties, in fact, agreed that that was a proper method.
Sorry, you can't confer jurisdiction on a U.S. district court by agreement.
But Your Honor,
can you reduce our jurisdiction by agreement?
But Your Honor, I would respectfully note that the IJ did not have jurisdiction. We do not believe the IJ had jurisdiction.
You just told me that the immigration judge did. That the immigration judge has the authority to review a claim that notice was never given because there's no there's no discretionary decision there.
Actually, Your Honor, I was referring to Your Honor's hypothetical. I believe in this case, what was alleged is that the notice was not served properly, was the allegation. And therefore, I believe
that's a claim that notice is never given. It may be a bad claim, right? Suppose the notice, I mean, suppose the regional director's decision showed on its cover that notice was sent not to Cueto, but to John Jones in Sacramento, California, right? Some completely different person. You think the immigration judge could take notice of the fact? Well, I don't want to say noted, right? Could the immigration judge could recognize that the notice had been sent to just the wrong guy?
But, Your Honor, I believe the immigration judge in this case did actually refer to these issues that you're referring to. And what the immigration judge in this case noted in his decision and in the transcript was the fact that what we had here was notice that was in essence being everybody agreed to was sent properly but was not received. And based on that, the immigration judge stated that he found based on that that the regulation was followed by the service pursuant to 8 CFR 264.1. So to the extent that, as I said further, that he would have jurisdiction to challenge to make a determination regarding the effect of the regulations, what happened in this case, Your Honor, was that a determination was made that the service, in this case, did follow the regulations that this court says are at issue. So there was actually that determination made in this case.
The Board of Immigration Appeals said that review of the argument this alien was making was barred by Rodriguez Esteban, was not being reached. It was procedurally irregular. That's different from the proposition that the argument was considered and rejected because notice was given. The board's decision disclaims any authority to rule on the alien's argument.
Well, then we would move to our second point, Your Honor, that this would be that any sort of remand would be futile in this matter because what we're dealing with, the sole issue that we're dealing with, Your Honor, is a basically an application for discretionary relief. And that is the sole issue that is before this that the alien in this case is claiming. He is not challenging whether or not he is removable. And indeed, Your Honor, even if he was an LPR, he would be removable pursuant to 8 USC 1227A2B1.
Look, if the immigration judge had said something like, I would deny his request even if he were still a lawful permanent resident, then this whole thing would have gone away. But the immigration judge didn't say that.
The immigration judge did not make a decision on that lawful permanent resident status.
Not listening to my observation. The immigration judge could easily have said, in the exercise of my discretion, I would deny the request for adjustment of status even if Cueto were a lawful permanent resident. But he didn't do that, and we can't say now that the agency might have done that, so there's no point in remanding.
But, Your Honor, we would note that that was not an issue raised, number one, to the IJ, and so therefore was not preserved for this court.
Of course it was raised before the immigration judge. That's what Cueto wanted. He wanted adjustment of status. The immigration judge denied it, not on the ground that he couldn't get it in an exercise of discretion, but on the ground that he wasn't a lawful permanent resident. And when the alien said, but I am a lawful permanent resident, the order in 1996 was invalid, the immigration judge put his fingers in his ears, metaphorically, of course, and said, I can't consider that argument. But I think we've now decided that the immigration judge could have considered that argument, could have considered the argument that the alien was never properly notified.
Your Honor, I believe that he was precluded, that the immigration judge himself was precluded by Rodriguez Esteban, as this court referred to before.
Now contradicting what you said earlier.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that under Rodriguez Esteban and also Ali versus Reno, that the actual motion to rescind the rescission is something that has to be determined by the district court and could not be...
So you're now saying that if the regional director said, I haven't bothered to give notice because I'm sick and tired of notice, that the immigration judge could not consider that fact?
After further thinking about it, Your Honor, I believe that under the board precedent and under Ali versus Reno, that's correct.
I must say, I don't give a fig about the board's precedent unless the board has reasoned out in a statutory way why. Now, if I understand Rodriguez Esteban, it's because the board says when the regional director exercises discretion, we can't review his discretion. That's an entirely understandable position, and that's why Judge Sykes and I have been giving you situations in which the regional director did not exercise discretion. Rodriguez, which talks about discretionary exercises, just doesn't cover the situations we're putting.
Well, I believe that what Rodriguez-Espin also referred to, Your Honor, was the situation in which the decision on the rescission of the lawful permanent resident status under the regulatory framework is not available to be appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals or an IJ because it's that first step before he objects to it where it's automatically rescinded, and thus there's no regulatory framework for the immigration judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals to review it. And I believe, and I said that my time is finishing, Your Honor, so may I just briefly state that I believe that because...
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Mr. Washburn?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with the panel that the most efficient, probably the best decision is that this entire matter be remanded to the BIA and the IJ, where everything can be considered in one evidentiary hearing before one competent authority. I do think it's important that the IJ be able to not only consider whether for statutory eligibility for discretionary relief from removal, he can ignore the rescission of LPR, but whether the IJ can actually reach back and say notice was not properly given, therefore Mr. Cueto has the opportunity to request a hearing, and if he so requests, I will give him that hearing and decide whether his LPR should be rescinded on the grounds of fraud. And I believe the IJ has the authority to do those things. That's the most efficient and sensible way to do matters.
I don't see how the immigration judge has authority to play the role of district director. I could understand how the immigration judge would say, notice was not given, the 1996 decision is invalid, and I will put the removal decision in stasis until a valid decision has been made by the regional director. That I could understand, but I can't understand the IJ making the decision himself.
Well, here's how that works, Your Honor. If Mr. Cueto had received notice, he would have 30 days in which to respond. If his response was, I want a hearing, then he's statutorily entitled to a hearing before the IJ. Failure to give notice not only denied him the opportunity to make his case in front of the district director, it denied him his opportunity, more importantly, to make his case before the IJ and have a full evidentiary hearing. That's what lack of notice denied him. And if the IJ determines that notice was not properly given, Mr. Cueto should have the opportunity to request a hearing before the IJ on the issue of rescission.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Washburn.
All right.
Case is taken under advisement.